The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with some articles from AARP, The Bulletin. We have a Q&A with Linda Carter. I've always embraced Wonder Woman as the ideal of what womanhood is. Linda Carter, America's pioneering female superhero, 72 years old, talks about acting, aging, and her role in a planned Smithsonian Women's History Museum. At 17, you start singing professionally. By 19, you're crossing the country with a band. At 21, you're crowned Miss World USA, and at 23, you land the role of Wonder Woman. That's quite a ride at a young age. Well, there were some lean years when I didn't have a penny. I really couldn't squander anything. I stayed with some friends for a while when I ran out of money. Eventually, I got the part of Wonder Woman, but I really survived by singing jingles and things to stretch the budget. But I had support from my mom in terms of, you can do it, you're going to be great. Looking back, I had a lot of tenacity and determination. I was naive in a helpful way. Question: Wonder Woman made you famous. How do you explain her enduring appeal? I think it's because this is the portrayal of a woman as the powerful creature that she is, one who cannot be diminished or overlooked. She is not a victim. She is extraordinary, as women are. You became identified with your first big role. Any regrets? No. I've always embraced Wonder Woman as the ideal of what womanhood is. And then she goes on to talk about the Smithsonian Women's History Museum coming up. You've served on the advisory council for that museum, which is in its planning stages. What drew you to the project? They were looking for people who would bring some new blood to the process. I jumped at the chance. I live in the D.C. area, so it was a thrill to see something in its early stages and know that it will last for generations to come. What need will this museum fill? It's about creating a space for women's history on the National Mall in Washington to inspire conversations and connections and change. This has to do with really having an understanding of stories that have not been told about women with true grit. Wonder Woman has been a role model for millions of girls. What women, past or present, influenced you? I would say Betty Friedan, Hillary Clinton, Golda Meir, Indira Gandhi, oh, and Dinah Shore of the Dinah Shore Chevy Show. Dinah inspired me because she could sing and dance. I saw a music video recently in which you look fit enough to wear your old Wonder Woman costume. How is that possible? I work out all the time, she laughs. No, I don't really. I try to watch what I eat and exercise a little bit. The secret is I've got my mother's genes. One reason to stay in shape is the American Women's History Museum is tentatively scheduled for completion in 2030. Will you be at the opening? If I survive. If not, then my daughter will be there. The museum will highlight issues with which women have dealt in the past. What do you see as the critical challenges facing older women? With older women, older people, there is a loneliness factor that is so important. Also, the warehousing of older Americans is now becoming a real problem. Your daughter Jessica has embraced the idea that women shape their destiny. She was an attorney and moved into music late. Was mom responsible? She started singing and doing some duets with me on stage. Jessica just loved it so much. It was a big decision to leave the law, but I stepped aside. She had to make those discoveries on her own. You lost your husband, Robert Altman, a Washington-based attorney and businessman, 3 years ago to leukemia. How did you handle that loss? I still grieve for him. I'm doing much better, but I miss him every day. He was the love of my life. I have to figure out how to fill the moments that would be filled with his company, his conversation, his laughter. And finally, you've filled some of that time with interesting projects. You just released a new song. Yes, the song is called Rise Up. It's a call for people to let their voices be heard, to not be afraid, to say what's on their mind. Speak up for democracy. Speak up with love and determination for democracy. And this interview was by Tom Dunkel. Now, I have just a little bit left in an article that I started last time when I ran out of time. Our experts answer your fraud questions, and we only have two questions left here. My wife is getting calls supposedly from Medicare. They ask for her personal information so they can replace her card. I just want to know if this is a scam. Yes, it's 100% a scam. Medicare will never call you uninvited and ask you to give personal or private information. Medicare fraud is big business, and you want to protect your number as you would any other personal or financial information. If you suspect a criminal has your Medicare number, call 1-800-MEDICARE and watch your Medicare summary notices to ensure no one has charged items to your number without your permission. My husband got an email from someone claiming to be with AARP, stating that he could fill out a survey to get a prize. In the past year, there have been an increase in the amount of reports to the AARP Fraud Watch Network helpline about scammers posing as AARP. This is not surprising, because AARP is viewed as trustworthy. It's important to remember that AARP will never contact you unsolicited asking for personal or financial information. If you ever have a doubt, call the helpline, 877-908-3360. Again, the helpline for AARP, if you're concerned about a scam, 877-908-3360. Now, how about some information on protecting what you collect? This is also from the bulletin. A five-step approach to ensure that those treasures you've gathered over the years maintain their values. Americans take pleasure in collecting things. Some 61% of us accumulate items of a similar nature, with coins, toys, trading cards, and jewelry topping the list. According to a 2022 survey by Magnify Money by LendingTree, collectors have spent an average of more than $6,000 on their treasures. Owning a collection isn't as simple as putting it in the closet, says Joe Orlando, executive vice president of sports at Dallas-based Heritage Auctions. It requires planning and care. That's especially true if you hope one day to sell or donate the collection, or you want your heirs to get prime value. Here are five steps to being a top-grade steward of your collection. Step 1, organize it. A detailed inventory of your collection, kept either in a computer spreadsheet or on paper, is an important tool in assessing the collection's value. A good inventory should include a description of each item, noting where you bought it and how much you paid, plus useful data such as size, age, and flaws. This baseline info can give you a sense of whether you should buy additional insurance coverage and also serves as a resource for your heirs. Make sure they don't sell something valuable at a yard sale, says LaGina Austin of Hindman Auctions in Boston, who is a regular appraiser on the long-running PBS program Antiques Roadshow. Step 2. Accurately value it. For a general sense of your collection's worth, and you should update this estimate every few years, look at recently completed transactions for similar items at online auction sites. For example, Thomas Ruggie, 55, of Tavares, Florida, is confident that a pair of boxing trunks in his collection, worn by Muhammad Ali in the famous Rumble in the Jungle bout against George Foreman in 1974, would sell for six figures, based on his research of other unique pieces of sports memorabilia. For a more official determination, find an appraiser who is a member of the Appraisers Association of America, the American Society of Appraisers, or the International Society of Appraisers, all of whose members are trained and certified and agree to abide by ethical standards. You'll want to get two valuations from your appraisal. Fair market value is the price that a specific collection might fetch in a transaction between a willing buyer and a willing seller. Retail replacement value is the highest amount you might need to replace your collection with another of similar age, quality, appearance, and condition. This is the estimated value that collectors typically use for insurance purposes. An appraiser should charge a flat or hourly fee, not one based on a percentage of the item's values. That's a conflict of interest. You can also get an item graded. This is common for collectibles that aren't so rare, but for which conditions can drive value, such as comic books, trading cards, coins, video games, or autographs. A variety of firms perform this service, including GCG Comics, PSA Authentication and Grading Service, Collectible Grading Authority, and TAG, T-A-G. They will assign a letter or numerical value to it, a key factor at sale. The grading services have removed much of the subjectivity, says Edward Jastrom, West of Westrop, Massachusetts, a collector of model soldiers who works in financial services and advises clients who have high-end collections. Number 3. Store it properly. Heat and light are not your friends. Raleigh, North Carolina physician Perico Arcado, 55, has a collection of about 1,000 bottles of perfume that he keeps in rooms that stay cool and dark most of the time. Even if you're the type of collector who likes to display your items, putting some real thought into where you do that can preserve their value. Experts advise shielding valuables from even indirect sun exposure by using covers or a UV glass case. A basement can be a good place to set up displays and avoid sunlight, but beware that humidity can cause mold and mildew, rot, and warping. The ideal temperature for just about any collectible is about 70 degrees, with lower humidity, 35 to 65%, says Colleen Fesco, a fine arts appraiser from Boston and 20-year veteran of Antiques Roadshow. If you do keep collectibles in your basement, running a dehumidifier can protect them from the dangers of dampness. The items aren't the only thing you should store. Receipts and original packaging can make a collectible worth much more than it would be alone. The original box for a fine piece of jewelry can add 10 to 20% to its value, says Rosalie Saya, a Seattle-based jewelry expert who goes by Rhinestone Rosie on Antiques Roadshow. Jastrom says he devotes more storage space to his model soldiers' packaging than to the soldiers themselves. To preserve their long-term potential value and keep them nice, you have to keep all the boxes, he says. It's a little ridiculous. Step 4. Keep it clean, but carefully. A little dust won't hurt anything, but removing it could. Abrasives, waxy polishes, and chemical cleaners are universal no-nos. Even soft cloths or dish towels can degrade some surfaces. You should refinish at your own risk and repair with caution. Original condition for a collectible is almost always most desirable. Repairing can be a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, Fesco says. I say if you're interested in reselling, just don't. Some collectors will never buy a piece that's repaired, agrees Peggy Schroeder, manager of Melwood Antiques and Interiors in Louisville, Kentucky. But the proper thing is to disclose it, don't hide it, and keep your records. And finally, number 5, plan its future. You might be one of the few lucky collectors whose children cherish the collection, but don't count on it. I don't think you can expect your children to love what you love, says Linda Krasner, who runs Vintage Repairs by Linda in Queens, New York. Your heirs would benefit more from written information about the collection. David Schufer of Suburban Denver details his fountain pen collection in his estate planning documents, telling his family what pens he has, why they are important to him, and what they might do with them. One of them, a Visconti pen made from Mount Etna lava, was given to me at birth of my first son. I would want him to have that pen, Schofer says. I've also left information about where to liquidate the bulk of the collection. One thing not to do is stress over your collection's value. The going price for all but the highest quality items can be unpredictable. Unless you own a timeless piece like a Picasso, the collectibles markets are subject to the whims of popular culture. One TikTok video can drive the demand for a vintage toy for a month, then interest moves elsewhere. Or one billionaire's preference for, say, Shaker furniture can cause a sudden spike and then a likely downturn. The bottom line, care for items while they're in your possession. But if stuff no longer brings pleasure, sell, gift, or donate it. It served you well, Fresco says. Let someone else treasure it while you enjoy having one less thing to care for. This piece was written by Ingrid Case, who has also written for Money, Financial Planning, and Bankrate. And Christine Fellingham has also written for Good Housekeeping and In Style. Now we have a sidebar here, collectible care specifics, artwork. The safest place to display is on an interior wall. Avoid the bathroom because of humidity, kitchen because of heat, foyer because of outdoor elements, or spots near radiators or air conditioners. One of the last places you should hang a painting is over your fireplace, Fesco says. You think it's so wonderful to have this American landscape above the fireplace, but you are frying it from above, below, and behind. Precious paper. Unframed art, photos, prints, maps, and trading cards are fragile, with pastels and watercolors being difficult to preserve or restore. A watercolor that has lost its color is just gone, Fesco says. The only true safe place is an archival box, where items are separated with acid-free paper, foam core, or cardboard. Antique furniture. The best way to clean is with a soft, damp rag, says Claire Horvat, owner of Excel Shop Furniture Restoration in Louisville. For intricate carvings, Antiques Roadshow's Austin suggests a dry, soft brush. Don't vacuum under furniture with aprons or drop pendants unless you move it, she says. You can always see gouges where the vacuum has bumped it over the years. Jewelry. Avoid the urge to polish and clean jewelry and never soak it, which can loosen stones or cause discoloration. The only thing I tell people to do is to clean with a soft, dry toothbrush or a Q-tip dipped in alcohol. And finally, silver. Austin suggested polishing once or twice a year and storing in flannel chamois bags, never in plastic wrap. The plastic adheres to the silver and damages the finish. And now, under the heading of Your Life, Wanted, Dogs with Skills. And we have a picture here of a dog in training at Canine Companions in Medford, New York. A new generation of service animals can help with daily tasks and even monitor medical conditions. I'm sure that most of you know all about this, but let's give it a try anyway. What makes Malfoy a special dog isn't that he can obediently sit, stay, or raise a paw on command. That sort of good boy behavior is common for a 4-year-old Labrador Retriever. But Malfoy can also carry shopping bags, hold open doors, fetch a drink from the fridge, and even handle a credit card at a store's cash register. Malfoy does all this to help Anne-Marie Snow Matera, 51, of New York City, who has a mobility disability and uses a scooter to get around. She describes her service dog with the word life-changing. If you think you're seeing more service dogs like Malfoy in public these days, you're not wrong. The American Kennel Club estimates there are tens of thousands nationwide, and that number has been increasing as dogs are trained to cater to a growing range of human needs. We often think of them as being guide dogs or hearing assistance dogs, but we've come to realize they can do so much more for individuals with a wide range of disabilities, says Sheila Goff, a vice president of the American Kennel Club. Some dogs have been trained to sniff out, literally, an impending medical issue in their handler, such as low blood sugar or an oncoming seizure. Other dogs can help people with post-traumatic stress disorder or traumatic brain injury, including by interrupting nightmares, reminding them when it's time to take medication. Service dogs today go beyond the traditional German Shepherds, Labradors, and Golden Retrievers, and encompass many breeds, shapes, and sizes. Although larger dogs remain best suited to physical tasks, such as opening doors and adjusting light switches, dogs of any size can serve in cases where psychiatric assistance or medical alerts for epilepsy or diabetes are needed, says Carrie Rodriguez, assistant professor in the College of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Arizona. A Chihuahua can be just as good of a service dog as a Golden Retriever, depending on the tasks they are trained to do, she says. That isn't to say that just any dog is fit for service. Joff says the dog must have the ability to maintain a calm temperament around other people, hone new skills, and perform reliably in different environments. No government agency regulates the use of service dogs. Assistance Dogs International, ADI, a coalition of service dog organizations around the world, provides some structure listing the agencies that have completed its accreditation process. More organizations and nonprofits have gotten into service dog breeding, training, and placement, but they can't keep up with demand and often carry waiting lists of a year or more. The cost of getting a trained service dog typically ranges from $10,000 to $30,000, according to Bankrate, although nonprofit organizations raise money to make them affordable or even free for those in need. Private health insurance typically does not pay for service animals, nor does Medicare. To avoid the wait and expense, some people opt to train their dogs privately, though there is no guarantee that a pet will make a good service animal, says Chris Tiefenthaler, ADI Executive Director. The lack of unified standards has left the industry vulnerable to exploitation and deception. Anyone can buy a, quote, service animal vest for their pet for access to places where animals otherwise aren't allowed, and some people even buy fake certificates online. Then there's the recent rise of emotional support animals, which solely provide comfort and undergo no training. A previous provision in the Federal Air Carrier Access Act recognized emotional support animals as service animals. That means a lot of people would try to bring a pet on an airline and claim it as an emotional support animal, Joff says. It was easy to claim because there was no proof required. In response, policymakers have cracked down on service dog fraud. As of 2022, it is illegal in 33 states to misrepresent service animals. One issue is that abuse of the system breeds distrust, which can make public spaces less accommodating. The sad thing, Joff says, is that very often it's dog lovers simply wanting to bring their dogs someplace with them who didn't realize that service dog fraud is not a victimless crime, but something that undermines the needs of the people who rely on these dogs in their day-to-day lives. This article was by Julie Goldenberg, who's an associate editor of AARP Publications. Now, in a sidebar here, how a service dog can help. More confidence navigating the world. I used to always have to make sure I had somebody with me, Snow Matera says. When you get one of these dogs, you get a new form of independence. Caregiving help. According to research by the College of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Arizona, service dogs can reduce the caregiving workload and lead to better psychosocial health. A lifeline. They quite literally save lives, says Molly Neer, Director of Operations and Programs for Atlas Assistance Dogs. Her dog has alerted her before the onset of seizures, allowing her to move someplace safe to avoid falls and concussions. How to get one? Though there is no official accrediting body for the industry, research online for a local organization that has been vetted by Assistance Dogs International. And finally, make sure a service dog is right for you. They tend to attract attention, even though instructions on their vests advise people not to pet the dogs. For people with conditions such as extreme anxiety, the added public spotlight may be unwanted, Neer says. And another sidebar bit of information, 920,000 taxpayers served, $564 million saved. Last year alone, AARP Foundation helped more than 920,000 older adults with low income secure over $500 million in tax refunds and credits. Programs like AARP Foundation Tax Aid, the largest free volunteer-based tax preparation program in the nation, are a critical part of achieving your mission to reduce poverty to older adults in partnership with older adults, helping them move from surviving to thriving. Now, with a little bit of time we have left, let's look at a few more things that you might not have known about your brain. This is number 50. Did you know reflex responses like a knee jerk come from the spinal cord, not the brain? Did you know ads often use unidentified celebrities' voices, which may unconsciously influence consumers? Did you know about 1 out of every 1,000 people will remain aware for part of the time during anesthesia? Number 54, did you know the human brain uses replay to practice new games and new skills during sleep? Number 55, did you know the idea for Frankenstein came to Mary Shelley in a dream? Number 56, did you know that East Coast sports teams perform worse when they play in the West? And number 57, milk, cheese, and peanuts can help induce sleep. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.